who changed quickly, and after a few storms, it was now chilly autumn. Tianming twisted a ring-like ornament on his finger, the only item of clothing or jewelry he wore, and a protective force field with a radius of 3 meters appeared around them. The temperature within the field quickly rose to a comfortable level. AA could see no obvious heat source. She gave a wry smile. Humans during the Deterrence Era could manipulate force fields with the same precision, and such technology was used to maintain an atmosphere suitable for life in space without the use of physical barriers. However, humanity accomplished the feat only with the aid of enormous machines that consumed a great deal of energy, while Yun Tianming did it with nothing more than a ring on his finger. She did not know where Tianming had acquired the advanced technology he brought with him. Although his ship couldn't escape the Black Domain, it was able to satisfy virtually all their other needs. Even on this desolate planet, the two of them lived a life of relative ease that rivaled conditions back in the solar system. A few days earlier, while bathing in the lake, the water did contain some trace metals but was safe enough to bathe in. She had been reminded of the time in her life when she and Cheng Xin had experimented with antique bath soap bars. She told Tianming the story, and then, half joking, she said, "Oh, I wish I could get a bar of sweet-smelling bath soap. Wouldn't it be nice to take a bubble bath here?" She wasn't serious, of course, but to her surprise, Tianming entered his ship and returned a few minutes later to toss her a bar of soap. The fragrance was even stronger than the bar she had found in the museum hundreds of years ago. She had no idea how Tianming had managed it. There was also the miniature universe that Tianming had brought as a gift for Cheng Xin. She had seen the floating rectangular outline with her own eyes. Although she had never entered it, the very concept seemed to her an almost inconceivable invention. A small, self-contained universe that existed independent of the larger universe around. How could the Trisolarans possess such advanced technology? If they did, they wouldn't have worried about the destruction of Trisolaris, because moving to mini-universes would have solved all their problems. So how did such a marvel end up in the hands of Yun Tianming? She changed her mind.
"I'm warm now. Why don't you continue? It's better to let it all out. No matter what, I'm on your side."
Tianming lifted his face to the sky, deep in reverie. Only after a long pause did he speak again.
"I'll tell you about the day I woke up. A day I will never forget."
Tianming woke up and saw that he was lying in bed. He had a body. It must be a clone, he realized. This was a body without cancer cells, and he felt healthier and stronger than he had on Earth. Everything around him was automated. He didn't see any Trisolarans.
"Perhaps the extraterrestrials don't want to reveal themselves to me, lest their frightening alien appearance become a barrier for effective communication."
He got up and surveyed the room. There was a door, unlocked. After a moment of hesitation, he pushed it open, stepped through, and found himself in a garden. It was filled with sights familiar to him from the common era. An open lawn, a bridge over a thin stream, a rock formation, a small pagoda. Replicas made by the Trisolarans based on their understanding of Earth. The garden was surrounded by a tall wall that blocked his view of what lay beyond. Puffy clouds drifted in the clear sky, and the sun was bright and warm. He figured that this whole place was just part of a Trisolaran ship, which had been modified into a comfortable cage for him. The sky was probably the result of holographic projection. How did the Trisolarans plan to communicate with him? A line of text appeared in the sky. "Dear Mr. Yun Tianming, welcome to our world." The greeting, which was the first time the Trisolarans had talked to him, shocked him. But he maintained a calm demeanor and nodded.
How are you? He asked.
Fine.
The Trisolarans got right to the point.
We woke you because we need you to help us complete the plan for the conquest of Earth.
This is it.
A complicated smile curved up the corners of Tian Ming's mouth. He wasn't entirely surprised by the request. When he had refused to pledge his loyalty toward the human race at the United Nations, he had known such a day might come. It was time to make a decision.
Why should I betray my people? He asked coldly.
Divisions between species do not represent unbridgeable gaps. On Earth, many have already pledged their allegiance to us without our asking.
I'm sorry, but you're severely mistaken if you equate me with those pathetic cowards in the ETO.
The Trisolarans weren't angered by his response.
We all know that humans on Earth didn't treat you with kindness. It was no coincidence that you came to be among us. For the last few years, by studying your brain and mind, our society has already made great strides, and your name is highly esteemed by the Trisolaran people. If you agree to help us, you will become the most honored citizen of Trisolaris, with privileges second only to the princeps. We understand that our material goods may be of no interest to you, but once our fleet arrives at Earth, you will have the resources of the entire planet at your disposal, and you can have whatever humans dream of.
Tian Ming sneered. What would I do with any of that if humanity is exterminated?
We won't eradicate all humans. Your species will certainly continue. The need for scientific research alone requires a small number of humans to be preserved, say in the range of a few hundred thousand to a few million. We'll set aside a reservation on Earth for them, and we'll make you their absolute ruler. With the help of our advanced technology, you'll live better than any king or emperor in the history of your world.
Since the Trisolarans were incapable of lying, Tian Ming knew that their promises were genuine.
What if I refuse? He asked.
We would be sorry to hear that, but we won't do anything to you, except return you to sleep in our dreams.
Tian Ming trembled uncontrollably. He knew what the Trisolarans were promising. A perpetual nightmare from which he would never wake up. This was far worse than any physical torture they could devise. Tian Ming had had enough. Why should he continue to live in that hell in his head? For the sake of his human compatriots? What was humanity? They were the ones who pulled him out of a quiet end in euthanasia, cut out his brain, froze it in a space probe, and then sent it here to a fate worse than death. Why should he care about them? The dark thoughts flitted across his mind, demanding that he not be foolish. Tian Ming knew that the Trisolarans were waiting patiently for his answer.
I'm sorry, but I have to say no, he said.
He didn't know exactly why he chose to resist. He knew that if he yielded, even if every human being on Earth cursed his name, he wouldn't have felt guilty at all. This wasn't a burden that he should have been made responsible for. Perhaps he refused not out of any sense of duty, but because of an anachronistic sense of nobility. To hold on to one's independent will, to refuse to submit to enslavement, to despise enticements as well as threats, such was the dignity and pride of each individual human being. This was something that the Trisolarans, guided by the philosophy of survival above all else, could never understand, and perhaps did not want to understand.
Do you need more time to consider our proposal? We have noticed that humans seem to require some time to think before making important decisions.
There's no need, Tian Ming said. He wasn't sure how much time had passed.
he found himself standing on a tree-lined path with golden leaves drifting down around him. It was fall, and he was next to the open lawn at the heart of his college campus. A few students sat on the grass, reading. In the distance, a couple held each other tightly. On the basketball court next to the lawn, a group of athletes played, cheering and shouting. Aimlessly, he walked along the path. He decided that he must still be a student here, but he was too shocked to think about how he had returned. The whole world seemed to brighten as a familiar figure appeared at the end of the path, gradually growing as the distance between them closed. A young woman dressed in a pale yellow windbreaker. She stopped in front of him, a smile on her face.
"You came," she said.
Tianming heard the affectionate tone in Cheng Xin's voice. He saw her take his arm and lean against his side as though they were lovers. He was perplexed.
When? How?
Love and tenderness filled his heart, but he immediately realized that it was all too perfect and too sweet to be true. With a deep shudder, he realized that this was yet another dream, the beginning of another horrible session of torture. "No," he cried out. But he didn't wake up. Cheng Xin gazed at him, puzzled. Anxiously, Tianming looked around. Was the sky going to open up and rain down blood? Would the earth crack under his feet? Would all those students around them turn into zombies and attack him and Cheng Xin? For that matter, was Cheng Xin about to turn into a mummy with wispy white hair, or a monster with bloody boils all over her body? Would the two of them be buried alive or slaughtered in cold blood? What kind of horrors and evil lay in wait for them in this dream of paradise?
"What's wrong, Tianming? Are you all right?"
Cheng Xin asked, concerned. He gazed into her clear and innocent eyes. He could not imagine the trials and tortures that would be inflicted on her. He fell to the ground, unable to bear this twisted version of life.
"Stop it! Please, please don't make me dream anymore! I will cooperate! Do you hear me?"
Everything around him disappeared. Tianming found himself lying in bed in the room in which he had awakened earlier. Sweat drenched his body.
"I will ask for only one thing," he said. "I want to dream of being together with Cheng Xin every night. Dreams of happiness, not nightmares."
"That's not a problem at all," replied the Trisolarans with a line of floating text. Tianming imagined the alien sneer on the faces of the Trisolarans behind the text.
"You're nothing but a bug. No matter how you struggle, in the end, we will win."
Though he paused in his account, Tianming remained mired in reminiscence. From behind, IAA wrapped her arms about him and muttered,
"It's not your fault. It's not."
But she couldn't sort through her own complicated emotions. A sense of dread and bitterness grew in her heart. The hero she worshipped turned out to be as vulnerable as any ordinary human. Tianming gave another wry smile.
"My story isn't so simple."
Having reached an understanding with him, the Trisolarans gave Yun Tianming all the data and references he requested. In total, the information amounted to the capacity of a large library. After perusing the files for some time, Tianming explained that the task of helping the Trisolarans deceive humans was extremely difficult, and he needed time to think. The Trisolarans left him alone. Tianming paced back and forth in his artificial environment, sitting down to rest from time to time. There was a 7-story pagoda in the garden, and he climbed to the top to survey his world from that elevated perch, deep in thought. The next day, he returned to the top of the pagoda and sat there for about an hour. the Trisolarans did not bother him. He concluded that perhaps the Trisolarans had relaxed their vigilance against him. On the third day, he climbed the pagoda again as before, but when he had reached the top, he leapt over the guardrail and plunged toward the ground more than 20 meters below. He had planned the entire sequence of initial refusal, surrender in the dream, and post-dream proposal to collaborate. The goal of his deception was his own death. The gravity here was similar to gravity on Earth, and he had thought long and hard about where and how to make his leap. He was accelerating toward the ground with his head first, and as soon as his skull cracked open, his brain would be splattered. No matter how advanced Trisolaran technology was, he suspected that they couldn't put back together this cracked egg. The only fear he had was that the Trisolarans might possess the ability to generate a force field in midair to prevent him from striking the ground. As the ground neared and filled his sight, he barely had time for a flash of relief and joy before it all went dark. Tian Ming was the happiest suicide in the history of the world.
"So how did they revive you?"
AA's voice trembled. The knowledge that Tian Ming had survived the suicide attempt couldn't dispel a nameless terror from her.
"I woke up again and found myself unharmed, lying in that same room. Everything had been reset," Tian Ming said.
How was that possible? Do you mean... Oh."
AA had guessed at the truth.
"That's right. I never jumped off the pagoda."
Tian Ming's face now held a self-mocking expression.
"There was no pagoda. No waking up. No cloned body. The entire experience was nothing more than another dream injected into my mind by the Trisolarans. They didn't care what I did, because I was never in any real danger. This wasn't a deliberate act of deception on their part. They didn't inform me of this detail because they didn't think it was important. Although communicating with me through a dream had been done out of convenience, the Trisolarans later told me that they were impressed by my attempt at deception followed by suicide, a trick they could never have devised. If they had truly revived me in a cloned body, they suspected that they wouldn't have been able to stop me. This only reassured them that I was the right person to carry out strategic deception. Ironic, isn't it? After that, the contest of wills between the Trisolarans and me heated up. Since I refused to collaborate, they invented a variety of cruel nightmares to punish me. Whenever I couldn't take it anymore, I would agree to help them and then come up with excuses for delay or bad suggestions. Of course, such tricks became harder and harder to pull off, because the Trisolarans had studied my brain for such a long time that my thoughts were comparatively more transparent to them than other human beings. Deceiving them grew increasingly difficult. On the other hand, my mind also grew more inured to various scenes of horror and mental tortures, and I even learned to consciously override some of the sensations of physical pain they injected into me. Finally, they grew tired of this cat-and-mouse game and decided to bypass my consent and use my brain directly.
"Use your brain directly?"
AA asked. Tian Ming explained that the human brain was to some extent a problem-solving machine. When stimulated, it responded in certain predictable ways. Much of the process didn't require the participation of consciousness. Many important cognitive tasks were carried out subconsciously, with consciousness only providing supplemental functions like monitoring, storing, organizing, and refining. Nonetheless, if a person was unwilling to cooperate, they could consciously disrupt the nearly automatic processes. In order to make Yun Tianming's brain serve them subconsciously, the Trisolarans carefully isolated his consciousness from the rest of his mind, and then used their computers to control and direct what remained of his cognitive functions. The test, however, resulted in a failure. the Trisolarans discovered that a computer could not substitute for the reflective and refining functions of consciousness itself, especially not a Trisolaran computer that was ill-matched to human minds. The Trisolarans had to make all of Tian Ming serve them, including his conscious will. So, the Trisolarans resorted to other techniques to induce some semblance of cooperation. For example, they used drugs to bring Tianming's brain into a hallucinatory state and attempted to question him for ideas on strategic deception. However, Tianming's confused and unfocused mental state while drugged prevented him from giving useful suggestions. The Trisolarans also tried a technique that Tianming later dubbed soul shock therapy. This involved injecting questions into Tianming's brain and forcing him to think about how to solve them. Whenever Tianming tried to resist, his brain center emitted a specific signal, which triggered a soul shock, a powerful surge of stimuli that caused Tianming extreme mental anguish and the sensation of physical pain. By this means, the Trisolarans hoped to remove his resistance through aversive conditioning. They were somewhat successful at first. But eventually, Tianming learned mental techniques familiar to yoga and Chan Buddhism practitioners. Instead of actively resisting, Tianming made his mind go blank. By not thinking of anything, he created a hidden partition in his mind in which thoughts could continue without interruption. He also developed the nearly superhuman capacity to endure the painful tortures the Trisolarans subjected him to without breaking down. The average person used only a small part of the potential of their brain, and the cruel Trisolarans unintentionally forced Tianming to realize more and more of his mind's infinite potential. Despite repeated all-out assaults in this epic of psychomachia, the technologically far superior Trisolarans failed to breach the fortress Tianming had constructed in his mind and had to admit defeat. AA was now even more baffled.
If the Trisolarans couldn't conquer your mind, why did you surrender to them in the end?
What do you think is the key to a successful lie? Tianming countered.
AA hesitated.
I guess to account for the details, or maybe to understand the other side's psychology?
No. It's sincerity. To be so sincere that even the liar believes it. Tianming sighed. The Trisolarans were not of a single mind. Encounter with human civilization had shocked their society to the core. The early years of the Deterrence Era, when Tianming and the Trisolarans struggled over his soul, also saw Trisolaran society face its own unprecedented crisis. The creation of the Deterrence System put the dream of Earth's conquest out of reach, and the sense of defeat led to social instability. The popularity of Earth culture and the advent of cloud computing further buffeted the foundation of traditional Trisolaran society. Gradually, the sparks of revolution spread both on Trisolaris and in the Trisolaran fleet. And soon after, an unexpected chaotic era struck, leading to social collapse and the turbulence of the Trisolaran Revolution. Because they lived in such an inhospitable environment, stability was the overriding goal of Trisolaran political philosophy. Throughout Trisolaran history, there were few events that could be classified as true revolutions. Even if there had been seeds of rebellion, the Trisolarans' inability to lie meant that revolutionary techniques such as secret plots and underground organizations were inapplicable. It was impossible for Trisolarans harboring rebellious thoughts to disguise them, and they would have been prosecuted for their thought crimes long before they could put them into action. It wasn't until the Trisolarans encountered humans that they realized that a secret organization aiming to change the status quo was even possible. But now they had cloud computing. Although the devices were forbidden to ordinary citizens, government research institutes and the military still possessed some. The revolutionaries took advantage of the deceptive capabilities of these devices
and remained undetected until the period of instability between the stable era and the chaotic era, at which point they instigated a riot that snowballed out of control. The revolution succeeded beyond their wildest dreams because the ruling elite were completely unprepared, and the old order collapsed overnight. The rebels overthrew the old princeps and nobles on Tri-Solaris and renounced plans for a strategic counterattack against Earth. The new government held romantic notions about Earth civilization, and the new leaders desired to maintain peace with humanity in exchange for a new home on one of the other planets in the solar system. Through the use of instantaneous SOFON communication, they took charge of the Tri-Solaran fleet. Although the fleet was dominated by Hawks who preferred to conquer Earth and exterminate humans, they obeyed the orders of the new government. Obedience was the instinctive reaction of most Tri-Solarans, who had no tradition of saying one thing while planning another. On the Tri-Solaran ship, Tianming's understanding of the details of the revolution was limited, but he quickly sensed that something seemed to have changed among his Tri-Solaran captors. The tortures they subjected him to slackened and then ceased. After some time, the Tri-Solarans re-established contact with him and informed him that there had been a change back home on Tri-Solaris. They now wished him to serve as a bridge between the two peoples and build trust and friendship.
"Wait a minute," AA cried out. "This must be a trick. Did you believe them?"
Although AA had once been a believer in the friendly nature of the Tri-Solarans, the experience of the alien conquest of Earth had completely shattered such faith. She could never trust anything the Tri-Solarans said.
"No, it wasn't a trick," Tianming said, shaking his head. "If the Tri-Solarans were capable of devising such an elaborate plot, they would have had no need for my services. If I had believed them, then perhaps I really could have helped the two peoples find a way to live together in peace. But history is full of unexpected turns and ironic twists. I missed the opportunity."
Tianming had refused to believe the Tri-Solaran sincerity and had continued to refuse to cooperate. This time, the Tri-Solarans, beset by all the problems in the wake of a revolution, left him alone to dream on in his long sleep. They didn't torture him with manufactured nightmares, and they didn't wake him. From then on, Tianming lived in his dream world, and he had no idea how much subjective time he lived through. It might have been 2,000 years, but it could also have been 5,000 or 10,000.
"How many years was it, really?"
AA asked.
"Given that there are no objective markers such as sunsets or sunrises, I can't tell you for sure. In reality, perhaps about 20 years had passed in the real world, but it felt to me like thousands of years. In one dream, I even founded a civilization and observed its rise and fall."
"They trapped you in a dream for thousands of years? That is even more cruel than a life sentence."
AA was enraged.
"Not at all," Tianming said. "I count that long dream as the happiest period of my life. No one bothered me as I lived in my own mind. This was a happiness I never enjoyed even back on Earth. After so many years in the crucible of Tri-Solaran mental torture, my mind had been refined into a keen instrument. Not only did I wield it to create an unimaginatively vast interior landscape, I was also the master of this fresh domain. I could use my will to drive and describe the details of every dream. The education in classical literature that my parents had forced on me in my youth turned out to be incredibly helpful and provided me with the raw materials for the construction of my dream world. Sometimes I set off with the heroes aboard Argo in search of the Golden Fleece, ready to slay sea serpents and fight monsters. Other times I followed Grangoire through the dark alleys of medieval Paris, listening to the tolling of the bell by Quasimodo.
Still other times, I rode cloud carriages drawn by flying horses and traversed thousands of snow-topped peaks to visit Queen Mother of the West in the Kunlun Mountains. I was not a mere visitor to these worlds, but a creator. I conceived every detail of these universes. The Jerusalem of the New Testament, the hell and heaven of Divina Commedia, the Bianliang of along the river during the Qingming Festival, the heavenly palace and the Buddha's pure land as portrayed in Journey to the West. I also invented many marvels that had never been portrayed before. Kingdoms found in flower petals, universes bound in nutshells, seafloor metropolises and gardens floating in space. As a creator in dreams, I did not need to understand technical details or follow scientific laws. All I had to do was to imagine it, and it was so. "Let there be light," I declared, and the universe was luminous. I devised buildings that could not exist under mechanical principles, but they were magnificent, august, sublime. I constructed wonders that scrambled time and space. A Venice in the desert. A primeval forest at the heart of a metropolis. Waterfalls that hung from the stars to the earth. Tropical islands suspended in air. I also populated my worlds with colorful characters and astounding tales. War among the gods. Mysterious treasures. Legendary heroes. Youthful adventures, love that seared the soul and shattered the heart. Indeed, most of the 100-plus fairy tales I told the Trisolarans later were first conceived of during that time.
"I had no idea," exclaimed A.A. "I thought you worked hard to invent all those other fairy tales in order to disguise the fact that the three stories you told Cheng Xin held secrets."
"The work wasn't that hard," said a smiling Tian Ming. "When you have only limited time, somehow all you want to do is to procrastinate, nap, waste time. But when the time available to you is unlimited, you don't want to do anything else except create." Those fairy tales were an insignificant portion of my output.
"Why don't you tell me one of your romantic stories, then?" A.A. said.
She was so entranced by his account that she had forgotten the purpose of Tian Ming's story. Tenderly, she wrapped her arms about his neck and leaned on his shoulder.
"All right.
But let me think about which story to tell you. Oh, I know. I'll tell you one of my favorite tales. In ancient China, at the source of the Yangtze River, there was a Tibetan boy who lived in a village at the foot of the Tanggu La Mountains. The boy liked to imagine the world outside the mountains, which he had never left. One day, a merchant from China's heartland passed through the village. The boy followed the merchant everywhere and asked him about the sights he had seen. The merchant told the boy that the stream passing by their village flowed east to join many other streams and brooks, grew wider and deeper, progressed between peaks and over plains, through canyons and around hills, and after a journey of 12,000 li, plunged into the endless sea as the mightiest river in the land. The boy didn't know what a sea was, and so the merchant told him that it was a body of water so large that a ship could not sail to its edge. The whole world's rivers commingled there into a mirror broader than any land, reflecting a blue as pure as the sky. Next to the sea, situated in the lower reaches of the Yangtze River, was the Jiangnan region, a land of verdant hills and misty lakes, where painted pavilions and delicate houses dotted the countryside, like figures in a painting or words in a poem. Women dressed in flowing silk dresses oared elegant barges over the placid waterways, singing folk ditties in the gentle, refined accents of the Wu Topolect. The boy was utterly entranced by the merchant's tale, and he wanted to follow the man to Jiangnan, but none of the villagers believed the merchant's fantastical descriptions, and the boy's parents refused to let him go.
Finally, the merchant had to leave, but he left the boy with a small bottle from Jiang Nan. The boy then wrote a letter in Tibetan that described his dreams and fantasies and sealed it into the bottle along with a piece of pure jade from the nearby mountains. He set the bottle down in the stream by the village and hoped that the river would bring it to Jiang Nan, thousands of li away. Half a year later, as a lonely girl walked by the shore of the Yangtze outside the walls of Jiangkang, the city of stones and the largest metropolis in the world, she saw a bottle bobbing in the river. Tianming stopped because he saw the look on AA's face, a look of horror at the realization of a cruel secret.
That's a fairy tale of Yangtze, she finally cried out.
A few hundred years ago, she had played the popular and award-winning film for Cheng Xin. Since she had spent the vast majority of the intervening centuries in hibernation, the film was still fresh in her mind.
You live at one end of the Yangtze, and I the other. I think of you each day, beloved, though we cannot meet. We drink from the same river.
She had been so excited to share the film with Cheng Xin, telling her that it was an amazing artistic creation by the Trisolarans. But now Tianming was telling her that the story had been woven by him in a dream. That's right. I'm telling you the story of a fairy tale of Yangtze. Tianming's tone was calm as he continued his revelation. That film, and the vast majority of so-called Trisolaran artistic creations, were dreamed up by me. The Trisolarans gained the trust of humanity with my dreams. The Trisolaran strategic goal was to destroy humanity's gravitational wave universal broadcast system without triggering a broadcast, thereby ending the deterrent standoff. A prerequisite for reaching this goal was to induce humanity to elect as the sword holder someone as kind-hearted and weak as Cheng Xin. And the only way to accomplish that was to persuade humans that the Trisolarans no longer posed a threat. There were many ways to lull humans into thinking that the Trisolarans had been defanged, but the most effective was to build trust and goodwill. In order for humans to trust aliens, the humans had to be made to feel a sense of empathy with the aliens, to think, we are all the same. The chain of reasoning so far had long been the consensus of Trisolaran strategists after many rounds of theoretical debate and deduction. But they could not see how to accomplish the first link in the chain, changing the human perception of Trisolarans as irreducibly alien. The differences between the two civilizations were too vast. At the beginning of the Deterrence Era, the Trisolarans, lacking experience, had revealed some true facts about their social organization to the humans. For example, Trisolaran parents, after joining bodies in mating, would essentially die as they exploded into baby Trisolarans. As another example, aged and disabled Trisolarans were forcibly dehydrated and incinerated to improve social efficiency. These facts caused humanity to view the Trisolarans with great horror and disgust. The famous one-liner that had once been used by Trisolarans to describe humans was turned around and applied to the Trisolarans. You're bugs. The Trisolarans had used such a description for humans to summarize the vast gulf between the two civilizations' scientific knowledge and technology levels. But as used by the humans, the sentiment was also imbued with moral and cultural disgust. Once the peaceful Trisolarans took power on Trisolaris, they attempted to improve relations between the two peoples, but the weight of history and the cultural gap meant that their efforts had little effect. Trisolarans were a rational species, little affected by emotions and sentiments in their decisions, but humans could not forget the atrocities committed by the Trisolarans during the Doomsday Battle. The intensity of this human hatred seemed to the Trisolarans completely irrational, and they could not understand how to deal with it. And so the Trisolarans remembered Yun Tianming and hoped to discover the secret of overcoming this obstacle in his mind. they recorded all of his dreams, which they viewed as a treasure trove. Tianming himself became an idol for Trisolaran fans of Earth culture. After suitable processing, his dream creations were released as literary and visual compositions to wide acclaim among the Trisolarans. And after some careful adaptation, these works were transmitted to Earth under the guise of Trisolaran creations. It was unclear whether the Trisolarans intended to deceive humans from the start. Sending Tianming's works to Earth probably began as a simple gesture to demonstrate their goodwill. In addition, due to the extreme collectivist nature of Trisolaran culture, the concept of authorship was almost absent among the Trisolarans. Once they had slightly adapted Tianming's dreams to their own tastes, they naturally felt that the dreams could be called their own. By then, the Trisolarans had more or less learned the basic idea of keeping secrets, and so when humans inquired after the source of these artistic works, they didn't give a direct answer. Such omission was the height of their capacity for deception. Humans, of course, could never have dreamed that the Trisolarans possessed a human brain that was unconsciously churning out works of art for them, and came to the natural conclusion that the Trisolarans themselves were the artists. That Tianming's dreams were imbued with so much humanistic value and so rooted in Earth culture should have aroused suspicion among the humans. But the overconfidence of the Deterrence Era and the Trisolarans' genuine admiration for Earth culture led to a blindness on Earth. Humans believed that although their culture was still but a budding sprout in the dark forest, they had mastered universal moral values that were applicable everywhere in the cosmos, regardless of time or space. That these barbaric aliens would express such admiration for Earth culture and imitate it was perfectly natural. The very proof that Earth values were universal was provided by the fact that the Trisolarans, another advanced civilization, generated similar art as the Earth's when stimulated in appropriate ways. Moreover, the Trisolarans did add a few Trisolaran elements in the process of adaptation. Mixed in with a few genuine Trisolaran works of art done in imitation of Earth's examples, though they were not of the same quality as Tianming's dreams, the result was a story that compelled the belief of humans on Earth. As she listened to Tianming's explanation, AA recalled another humanistic Trisolaran creation.
Wait a minute. Did you also have a hand in the creation of Sophon?
AA shuddered as she thought of the Trisolaran ambassador who appeared sometimes as a ninja and other times as a classical Japanese beauty. Tianming's expression was a bit awkward as he nodded.
Yes, Sophon came out of my dreams as well.
Since Tianming had lived a socially awkward and isolated life on Earth, few female figures appeared in the visions his brain spun on the Trisolaran ship, except for his mother, his sister, and Cheng Xin. But one other woman appeared often in his imagination, sometimes gentle and shy, sometimes passionate and bold. The Trisolarans were very interested in this mysterious woman, and after much research by the Sophons, they discovered that she was a Japanese actress from the Common Era by the name of Ran Asakawa. During college, Tianming had often enjoyed her clips online in his dorm room when he was alone, and after he started working, he had bought a box set of all her films. Ran was apparently the representative of an aspect of Japanese culture that was extremely popular in much of Asia during that era. The Trisolarans had not initially paid much attention to Japan, but Tianming's dreams led their strategists to focus on this geographically confined state. They learned that the Japanese islands were subject to extreme natural disasters. Located on the fault line between two tectonic plates, the islands were often struck by earthquakes, tsunamis, and volcanic eruptions. A major tsunami near the end of the Common Era had taken the lives of tens of thousands. Many Japanese leaders had expressed concern that the islands were not a stable environment, and over Japan's history had launched multiple invasions of the mainland. Many humans spoke of the Japanese people as hardy, orderly, disciplined. Clearly, the Japanese experience could be quite illuminating for the Trisolarans. Most instructive of all, decades before the birth of Yun Tianming, Japan had initiated a bloody invasion of Yun Tianming's homeland, China, resulting in deep animosity between the two nations. Yet, within decades, Japanese entertainment products had swept China, and millions of young Chinese worshipped Japanese culture and followed Japanese stars, greatly ameliorating the historical enmity. This led numerous Trisolaran scholars to conclude that in order to induce humans to forget the historical wounds of the Doomsday Battle, the Trisolarans should imitate Japan's success. Thus, Sofan appeared as a Japanese woman modeled after Ren Asakawa.
"Ah!" Aa exclaimed. "After Cheng Xin met Sofan, she told me that the robot reminded her of a foreign actress from her time, but she didn't tell me who. I didn't realize that you and she were both fans of the same actress."
"Cheng Xin was a fan of Ren Asakawa?"
"Why are you so surprised?"
Aa wasn't sure why Tianming's tone was so odd.
Never mind."
Tianming grinned awkwardly and shook his head. Sofan's presentation achieved great success on Earth. In the middle years of the Deterrence Era, the trend was for growing valorization of traditionally feminine qualities, and Sofan's ultra-feminine act played to the taste of the time. Her dress, makeup, and jewelry all became marks of fashion. The appearance of Sofan accelerated the trends she was playing into. Many humans came to the conclusion that if the once brutal, savage Trisolarans were choosing to adopt such an image of non-threatening, gentle femininity, it was a sign that a similar evolution among humans would be most in line with the universal values of civilization. That classical line from Faust, slightly modified, became the symbol of a new conception of cosmic civilization. The eternal feminine draws us, as well as the Trisolarans, ever onward and upward. Soon, however, the Trisolarans were no longer willing to be led by human civilization. The Trisolaran reform movement didn't last long. Blindly introducing and imitating Earth culture was not useful for solving the many practical problems facing Trisolaran society. The chaotic era wasn't going to go away just because of the advent of a humanistic society. On the contrary, due to rising individualism on Trisolaris, the old authoritarian, militaristic chain of command had broken down. During the stable era, various factions pursued their own goals, leading to the fragmentation of Trisolaran society. Once the chaotic era arrived, the factions fought against each other with no coordination, leading to the deaths of billions. After 20 years of living under the new regime, the average Trisolaran had little good to say about the way things were going, and many even contemptuously called the Trisolaran government, "Government of the Earth Bugs, by the Earth Bugs, for the Earth Bugs." The reformists tried to solve their political difficulties by introducing democratic elections, another import from Earth. But the result was not what they expected. Candidates representing the Ancien Régime received the vast majority of votes and swept back into power, immediately purging and punishing the pro-Earth faction. After decades of tumult, the Trisolarans had seen enough of the weaknesses of human values, and the old yearning for military dominance came back into fashion. Once again, the plan to engage in strategic deception and attack Earth was on the agenda. The new Hawks discovered, to their delight, that the grand strategic deception had somehow already succeeded. Humans were now of the general opinion that the Trisolarans were a friendly and kind species. The key ingredients of the success of this strategic deception were none other than Yun Tianming's artistic creations and the once sincere admiration of the Trisolarans for Earth culture. Continuing the deception didn't pose a great difficulty. The Trisolaran scholars came to the conclusion that the self-defanging of human society was an irreversible trend that would continue unabated for at least a century more. With greater than 90% certainty, the complacent humans would elect as their next sword holder someone gentle and kind, and there were still many more artistic creations in Tianming's brain that could be employed as opiates for the humans. The Trisolarans might still be relatively naive when it came to schemes and plots, but they knew enough to let Sofon keep on arranging flowers and performing tea ceremonies to please the humans. This was also when Trisolaran scientists first successfully tested light-speed spaceships with curvature propulsion. Humans in later ages were sometimes puzzled by why the Trisolarans were still intent on conquering Earth if they possessed such advanced technology. The answer came down to the persistence of the Trisolarans. The first Trisolaran fleet had already been launched to conquer Earth, so they might as well finish their mission. The light-speed ships provided an additional bit of insurance. Even if the plan for conquest failed and humanity initiated gravitational wave universal broadcast, the Trisolarans figured that they had almost 150 years to produce massive light-speed ships to evacuate the vast majority of Trisolarans from their homeworld before the arrival of any Dark Forest attack. Based on how long it took for Luo Ji's spell to take effect, this was a reasonable estimate. No one could have predicted how quickly the Dark Forest strike would follow the subsequent universal broadcast. It was only 3 years before Trisolaris was obliterated. As plans for the conquest of Earth proceeded apace, the Trisolarans finally decided to awaken Tianming. They had no more need to study. The satisfied Trisolarans informed him that they wanted him to see the benefit of actively collaborating with them. But if he insisted on being contrary, they would enforce him. Due to his many contributions to the success of the Trisolaran deception of Earth, the glorious and generous Trisolaran civilization was happy to allow him to live out the rest of his life in peace. He could choose to do it as a dreaming brain, or he could even join Trisolaran society as a full-fledged member. If Yun Tianming chose to collaborate, he would give the Trisolarans some advantages. He could, for instance, suggest better ways for them to disguise their true intentions. The Trisolaran scholars calculated that the probability that a strike against Earth at the moment of the next swordholder handover would succeed was 87.53%. If Tianming chose to help them, the probability of success increased to 93.27%. If Tianming collaborated, the Trisolarans were willing to leave about 10 million humans alive after the invasion and pen them in Australia. This was a breeding population more than sufficient to preserve the seeds of human civilization. If Tianming refused to collaborate, the Trisolarans were happy enough with their 87.53% probability of success. And once they conquered Earth, they would engage in a program of total extermination of all humans and other Earth organisms, though for scientific research purposes they might preserve a few specimens and a genetic databank. They would, they vowed, not only eliminate humans from the solar system, but launch droplet strikes against blue space and ensure that human bugs did not survive anywhere in the universe.
"That's an impossible choice,"
AA couldn't help interrupting. She saw that no matter which path Tianming chose, he would be judged to have committed crimes against humanity. The only way out was if the humans could somehow seize the slight advantage provided by Tianming's non-collaboration, reducing the chances of Trisolaran success from 93.27% to 87.53%. But such hope was too dim to be relied on.
"If you had been in my place, what would you have done?" Tianming asked.
I don't know. I can't choose."
AA shook her head.
"What if you had to answer?"
After a long silence, AA answered.
I would collaborate."
Such was Tianming's choice as well. Collaboration would ensure the survival of at least a small population, and it was the only way to pass on a warning to the humans. After using Sofon's surveillance to verify that the Trisolaran claims of conditions on Earth and the fleet's readiness for war were true, Tianming continued to negotiate with his Trisolaran captors. He extracted from them the promise to increase the post-conquest human reservation population to 50 million. Only then did he pledge fealty to Trisolaris. The Trisolarans had no tradition of loyalty oaths or anything equivalent. Because their thoughts were transparent, determining whether someone was loyal was not a problem they ever needed to solve. Since Tianming was not a transparent Trisolaran, however, they wanted a ceremony to mark the special occasion. They scoured records of the ETO from centuries earlier to design a special oath-taking ceremony that could be broadcast to all Trisolarans on Trisolaris and in the fleet. Facing a camera, a grim-faced Tianming raised his fist and declared,
"Eliminate human tyranny! The world belongs to Trisolaris!"
One wonders what Ye Wenjie, Mike Evans, and all the other pioneers of the ETO would have thought of that moment. The Trisolarans also carefully examined Tianming's brain activity to ensure that they weren't being deceived. But after decades of fighting Trisolaran torturers for his own soul, Tianming had learned to disguise his deeper thoughts from Trisolaran probes. He simply tapped into the natural human instinct for self-deception. He had only to recall all the ways he had been mistreated and used by humans back on Earth, and imagine the wonderful life he was going to lead as king of the surviving humans. The Trisolaran scientists observing his brain saw fear, anger, and finally surrender based on cost-benefit analysis. Tianming helpfully organized these superficial thoughts into layers. Resentment toward humanity and despair, shame at his betrayal, self-justifying arguments, and greed for all the benefits he was going to enjoy later. The thoughts matched what the Trisolarans knew of human psychology and convinced them that Tianming's collaboration was genuine. Even after he had sworn the oath of loyalty, however, the Trisolarans still refused to show themselves to him. He had never once laid eyes on a Trisolaran. The Trisolarans explained to him that because their two species lived in such different environments, physical presence in the same space would require substantial work. Besides, the two sides could communicate effectively at any time through virtual windows appearing out of thin air, rendering face-to-face meetings unnecessary. Tianming puzzled over why the Trisolarans refused to let him see them and prevented him from looking up any images of Trisolarans. Eventually, he put the riddle aside, as he had more pressing matters to worry about. The main tasks required of Tianming were creating additional works of art for human consumption, revising and adding polish to diplomatic communiques from Trisolaris to Earth, and directing some non-official exchanges between the two worlds. His existence had to be kept hidden from the humans, and everything he did had to go through a special censoring group of Trisolaran officials to prevent him from secretly passing on intelligence information. Of course, this was exactly what Tianming intended to do: warn humanity that the Trisolarans were intent on conquering Earth. Tianming soon discovered that the Trisolaran censors were as unskilled at counter-deception as at deception. They could not tell when messages contained hidden meanings, and so it was easy to slip warnings past them in his work intended for humans. During the next decade, Tianming warned humanity many times, often through Sofan herself.
"What?"
AA was shocked.
"But I don't remember any such warnings."
"I sent plenty of secret messages.
For example, do you remember the science fiction novel The Trojan Nebula? It's a retelling of the classic tale of the Trojan War in a space opera setting. I deliberately emphasized the plot point where the space Greeks only pretended to give up, but then used gifts to the space Trojans to disguise their plot of conquest. The book sold well on Earth, but no one seemed to understand the real theme."
"Oh, so that's what that book was about."
AA was amazed.
"I did think the book was probably trying to make some political point, but I thought it was about how Luoji and Zhang Beihai had only pretended to give up or run away from the Trisolarans in order to use plots and schemes to triumph over the Trisolarans in the end. I had no idea you meant the opposite.
Your interpretation was shared by 9 people out of 10 on Earth. Tianming sighed. Arrogant humans always imagine themselves as the victors, even when reading fiction. I realized after a while that such hidden messages were too obscure to be of use. As the years went by, I was running out of time. Finally, I took a big risk and wrote a film script that laid out the truth in plain sight. The Betrayal of Heaven. The Betrayal of Heaven was an alternate history tale. In this fictional universe, shortly after the establishment of Dark Forest Deterrence, the Trisolarans murdered Luo-Ji through a series of clever plots and then invaded Earth. The scenes involving the conquest of Earth by the Trisolaran fleet were extremely brutal and shocking. Tianming thought he was being too obvious and was prepared to die when the Trisolaran censors reviewed his work. However, the Trisolarans not only approved his script, but even turned it into a holographic film for transmission to Earth. The film did cause a great deal of controversy and debate on Earth, but not in the ways Tianming intended. Critics praised the film as a profound distillation of Trisolaran rumination on the horrors of their warlike past and the depth of their commitment to humanistic values. It won Best Picture at the Oscars, and Sofon, dressed in an elegant kimono, accepted the award on behalf of Trisolaris. Not all blame could be laid at the feet of human arrogance and stupidity. The film was a paradox. Since it was presented to Earth as a Trisolaran creation, the more it showed the Trisolarans to be cruel and bloodthirsty, the more humans viewed it as the Trisolarans engaging in honest reflection. Moreover, since everyone knew that the Trisolarans were incapable of lying, the idea that it represented some kind of elaborate Trisolaran plot was unthinkable. Although a few suspicious humans who advocated a hard line against the Trisolarans claimed that the film was a confession of the Trisolarans' true intentions, most people ignored these Cassandras. But Tianming had one more trick up his sleeve. Besides composing novels and scripts, Tianming was also tasked with helping Trisolaran scientists come up with false fundamental scientific theories to give to the humans. To be effective, such theories had to appear correct while being wrong, and such advanced deception was beyond the capacity of almost all Trisolaran scientists. They thus left the job to Yun Tianming. But Tianming had only a college degree from the 20th century, and it was difficult for him to grasp many advanced scientific concepts. He took inspiration from the wuxia fantasy novels he had read during his youth, in which evildoers would sometimes kidnap heroes and force them to teach them super-secret advanced martial arts skills. The heroes would pretend to teach them these techniques, but alter key breathing instructions or meridian qi flow paths to sabotage their efforts. Tianming took real Trisolaran scientific theories and altered the numbers in them, adding a zero to a quark-related constant here, erasing a radical sign from a formula relating to space curvature there, and so on. Given the rate that human science was progressing, it would take them decades before they could experimentally falsify any of these numbers. After the Trisolaran scientists learned his technique, they hailed him as a genius. What Tianming did wasn't difficult, but the scientists were disgusted by the very idea of having to deceive anyone with made-up numbers. Whenever they had to do such a thing themselves, they felt the urge to expel fecal matter.
"So that explains it," AA said. "When I was working on my PhD dissertation, I was confused by how a constant provided by Trisolaran scientists just didn't fit. I worked and worked at it, and had to give up in the end. I almost failed my defense because of it. It's all your fault."
Tianming smiled helplessly. "That was actually a deliberate plant from me intended as a hint. While most of my changes could not be experimentally falsified for many years, there were a few changes I made that could be shown to be nonsense through theoretical derivation alone. I was hoping that these could serve as clues for human scientists and alert them to be vigilant against Tri-Solaran treachery.
Oh, you idiot.
It was now Dr. IAA's turn to lecture him.
This is because you only have an undergraduate degree and don't understand how academia really works. Your way of dropping hints is useless. Even if someone managed to experimentally falsify your numbers, the immediate response from the professors would be to question whether the experiment had been designed and conducted correctly. How could you expect an experiment to disprove theories handed to us by Tri-Solaran scientists, widely accepted as being at least several centuries ahead of Earth scientists? Other labs wouldn't bother trying to replicate your result, and even if you could somehow get others to repeat the experiment and show that the number was wrong, the established theoreticians would come up with one supplemental theory after another to explain away the discrepancy. They'd built their entire academic reputation and careers on Tri-Solaran theories, and they'd defend their paychecks to the death. Even if they ran out of explanations, they'd demand that you provide a better theory that could explain the results. And God help you if your new theory had even one imperfection. They'd attack you like a swarm of bees and focus on that one weakness and ignore the rest of it. And even then, you'd be lucky. The most likely result is they would just ignore you as a mere upstart. To get the entire scientific establishment to recant would require all the old tenured professors to die of old age.
In any event, all of Tianming's attempts at warning humanity failed. His collaboration did in fact increase the chances of the success of Tri-Solaran deception. The silver lining was that it got the Tri-Solarans to believe that he really was loyal to the interests of Tri-Solaris. Tianming's status in Tri-Solaran society shot up, and shortly before the final invasion, he gained the authority to direct the Sofons to observe Earth wherever he wanted, though he still couldn't initiate contact with the humans. That was when I saw Cheng Xin being awakened from hibernation. After that, I was with the two of you constantly.
I think you mean that you were with her, said AA. I was the third wheel without knowing it.
Her outburst of jealousy was actually rooted in a secret only she knew. A secret concerning Cheng Xin and Yun Tianming. The secret had started 200 years before her birth, during the Common Era, when aliens existed only in science fiction. It involved someone who was AA, and also not AA. I really did mean both of you, Tianming said. AA, during all these years you were always by Cheng Xin's side, and I knew you like a best friend. Actually, come to think of it, I felt a sense of familiarity with you as soon as I saw you.
Are you telling me I reminded you of Ran Asa something?
AA interrupted. Of course not. I don't know how to explain it. Maybe you just have a natural charisma that makes people feel close to you. You were always running around, and sometimes the Sofons couldn't even keep up.
Wait a minute.